The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
There are lots of you getting in touch about the situation in Venezuela and the fairly extraordinary 24 hours that we've seen and that extraordinary, even more extraordinary press conference that was there yesterday. To get an update on the developing situation, I'm joined now by Paul Brandis of West Wing Reports and armed conflict expert specialising in Latin America at the International Institute for Strategic Studies, Dr. Irene Mia. Good morning, at least good morning Irish time to all of you at the moment. Dr. Mia, we might start with yourself and you might bring us into the situation in Venezuela this morning. Who is actually in charge, both on the ground, but then, I suppose, pulling the strings from the US regime?
That's a very good question. Good morning. So what we heard is from the extraordinary conference that we had yesterday is that the U.S. will run Venezuela for the time being until it's safe to hand it over, not too sure to whom. Apparently, Marcos Rubio had a conversation with the vice president of Venezuela, Delcy Rodriguez. Delcy Rodriguez denied the conversation, but it is an option that obviously Maduro was in a way probably betrayed by one of its inner or two of its people in his inner circle, which had been negotiating with Trump. So I wouldn't be surprised whether there had been some negotiation with the vice president in the days prior the extraordinary events of yesterday.
Yeah, and the press conference would certainly lead you to believe that they are working together. Now, on the ground, are they encouraging people to still support the regime as was led by Maduro? Is there talk of a new regime? And where does this opposition leader who has been in exile, who of course won the Peace Prize, the Nobel Peace Prize that Donald Trump coveted himself, again, the US seeming to pour cold water on her chances of actually leading the country?
Yeah, I mean, my view on Trump's action in Venezuela has always been that the clear national was more economic security and energy security. And, you know, obviously, Venezuela is the largest oil resources in the world and is also endowed with, gold and other minerals. So I think in the case of Trump, Marcos Rubio may have a different view, of course, but in the case of Trump, I don't think it was that much about regime change, but more about negotiating the best condition to, oil and mineral resources in Venezuela. So I think in that sense, he wasn't particularly interested in regime change for the sake of, democracy or, installing the opposition, which had arguably won the election in back last year. So I think, in a way, it does work. It would work best to work with the current government or what is left of it, just because the situation in Venezuela is really problematic. And also, in a way, I think what we don't really discuss much is that there was a bit of a pax mafiosa at the moment, right? Because there is a lot of criminal activity going on in Venezuela. There are Colombian armed groups, actually, which were being protected by Venezuela. There are also part of the Venezuela regime, which, as we know, are really very much, involved in drug trafficking and other criminal activities. So I think to control all those kind of different potential drivers of more armed violence, you are better off with the current government, if you see what I mean.
Right. So do you think the average person in Venezuela might be happy enough for the current government to stay there, albeit under new leadership and one that is more controlled by the Americans that does crack down on those drug gangs?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think at the moment, you haven't seen much, either support or protest in Caracas. It's been very quiet. I think people are kind of wait and see, right? Because it has been a few decades of, and especially the last year has been quite tough for the people in Venezuela. I think it will depend really on what the US is going to be able to do, because in a way, as I said, it's a very, also we are talking about a country which is in the middle of an economic collapse, right? So what is that that the US is going to, even if US you know, oil companies are willing to invest in Venezuela, will take time. You know, it's all what is lacking as often in Trump's vision is what is the actual plan on the ground, right? Because it's not one thing is say we will run Venezuela, but then how are you going really to ensure basic services to the population? How are you going to ensure that actually all the Maduro machine, which is will still be there in many ways, right? Mm-hmm. It's just Maduro which has left. So I think it's interesting. We would like to see how the on the local ground, you know, things will work out. Also, you mentioned obviously Corina Machado, which was quite surprising what he said yesterday, Trump. Right? I think they yeah. were the first to be surprised. I think because clearly they were actually hoping for Trump to intervene, and they were very supportive to that. But it was interesting. And again, I think it's an expression of his pragmatism, or the fact that, as I said, he's not really particularly interested in, you know, in upholding democratic values in Venezuela. So yeah, I think it's all in flux. We will have to see what's happening. I think it's going to be a much more complicated endeavor than what he anticipates, and I guess. He did mention boots on the ground. I think probably boots on the ground, he was thinking about more protecting the oil facilities. But actually all the kind of reconstruction and restoration of a viable state apparatus is going to be really hard, and it would involve a lot of, you know, more than boots on the ground, right? It would involve lots of resources, money, rebuilding institution, if that's what he wants to do, which I don't think it is. But I think that's the big question. Is it also something that the Trump's constituency and popular support will actually like? Because in a way, you know, that's not the one of the things that he said is that it was America first. Now, we have understood that America first includes also Latin America, right? In many ways, as part of the backyard and sphere of influence. But nevertheless, it's another endeavor that, it's something that it reminds more of Iraq rather than, you know, something kind of easy and just get in and get the oil, right?
It's a longer term sort of a play. It'll be interesting, I suppose. It'll be fascinating even tomorrow. If you were a civil servant in Venezuela, do you show up to work? How does all that work?
Indeed.
I suppose, you know, we'll see in the coming days. I'm also joined on the line by Paul Brandis of West Wing Reports. Paul, we're all looking at this obviously through a Latin American or through a European lens. How has all of this played in the American media and for the American public in the last 24 hours?
Well, it's been, as you mentioned, an incredibly dramatic 24 hours. These pictures of Maduro being taken off the plane in New York last night in the dark, surrounded by men in black, heavily armed guards, and then being this phrase in America, the perp walk, where he was brought in to the jail in Brooklyn, where he presumably is this morning. Just an incredible 24 hours. But, you know, talking to people yesterday, there are a lot of Americans who, frankly, I don't mean to be rude, but have trouble locating Venezuela on a map. They're not quite sure why we're doing this. We have problems here at home. And a lot of the MAGA people, the Trump supporters, this block has really been splitting up in recent weeks over a variety of issues. And I think that this could be another one. I mean, the whole America First movement has been, well, we can't be the world's policemen. We've got to take care of our own problems. We've got all kinds of issues here. And yet here we are meddling in a giant country way down in South America. So there are a lot of questions about how this will be received. But that's the long-term issue. The issue now is that the easy part for Trump has been done. The dramatic part is over, which he loves. It seems rather easy to remove this leader. But what happens now? Your prior guest was, I think, on the money when she said, well, will these American oil companies really invest? I'm not quite so sure they will. All kinds of issues going on here, but certainly very dramatic 24 hours.
So if it isn't something that's playing to the base, who is he doing this for? Why is he doing it? Is it as the previous guest said, that it's for the oil ultimately and it's money at the end of the day?
Well, I suppose there are a couple of things. I mean, the drug trafficking is unquestionably an issue. They want to eliminate drug trafficking to the United States. The southern border with Mexico has pretty much been shut down. But one thing that has not been said about, if you want to eliminate drug trafficking, how about doing something on the demand side? Americans continue to want to use cocaine and marijuana and all these things. It seems difficult to work that side of the equation, so let's try and work on the demand side. I have a feeling it's probably not going to work, but we'll see. So that's the drug trafficking issue. The oil issue, as I mentioned, Venezuela has more proven oil reserves than anybody, more than the Saudis, more than us, more than Canada and Russia and so forth. But it is a huge problem because despite these huge reserves, they barely produce about 1 million barrels a day. And American companies, I think, are going to be loath to invest for a variety of reasons. I've not seen any commentary by ExxonMobil or anyone else that they're eager to go in there and depart with a lot of shareholder capital to go in there when we already have an energy glut here. It's not like there's an energy shortage here. So I don't quite know why oil companies would be incentivized to do that. So there's the narco trafficking angle, there's the oil angle, and China is perhaps another angle. I'm not quite sure if Trump is enough of a chess player to see it this way. He might be, but whatever oil Venezuela produces, most of it goes to China. And of course, we have this U.S.-Chinese competition. It very well could be that the United States wants to, in the event of a war with Taiwan, God forbid, the U.S. wants to do whatever it can to clamp down on Chinese energy supplies. Who knows if they're thinking in those terms, but that's another possible issue as well.
Yeah, I appreciate we're all somewhat throwing darts at a dartboard here, trying to predict the long-term plan of a man who doesn't seem to often have long-term plans. But when it comes to, I was reading about the troop deployments this morning, and they said there's roughly 5,000 American troops involved in this campaign, and that a force of this size, if it was expected to be not quite an occupying force, but one that would retain control long enough for those companies to come in and do what Donald Trump said they would do. Like, by comparison, the Panama operation that you mentioned there involved 27,000 troops. Iraq was 160,000. That was obviously on a much bigger scale. Do they have the bodies in the region to control the country if the Venezuelans decide they don't want to be controlled?
They don't at the moment. I suppose they could move troops around. But this speaks to a larger American problem, is that we're stretched too thin. I mean, there are troops in Europe and Korea and Japan, the Middle East, everywhere. And this sort of the boy with his finger in the dike trying to contain everything. I'm not quite sure that we have the resources, frankly, to be everywhere at once. So I don't know. I suppose if they want to move more troops into Venezuela, they could. We have a large garrison in Guantanamo in Cuba. Cuba, by the way, is another angle talking about oil. Cuba is heavily dependent on Venezuela for oil. So that's another angle too, by the way. I don't know if we have the troops to really, what if Venezuela rises up and revolt? I don't know. I mean, your prior guest, I think, could speak more clearly to that than I could. But I have a feeling that we just don't have the resources to do what Trump thinks we can.
Right. Finally then, Paul, what of Maduro? We know he's in New York now. He's going to face an indictment in the courts there. What does his future and his wife's future look like?
Well, when he went on this perp walk in the courthouse last night, he was cameras were rolling, and he said, "Good night, Happy New Year," and then he shuffled away. He could appear in court as early as tomorrow. He was indicted 5 years ago on these narco trafficking charges. And if he is convicted, he conceivably could be sent to prison for the rest of his life. I'm not quite sure what his wife, Celia, I'm not quite sure what her involvement is here, but she is in prison too. So we'll see. But a court date as early as tomorrow. So I think sort of like Noriega in Panama in 1989, his career as a political leader, a dictator, a narco-trafficker, whatever label you want to apply to him, that seems to be over.
Okay, Paul Brandes of Westring Reports and Dr. Irene Mia, armed conflict expert specializing in Latin America at the International Institute for Strategic Studies. Thank you both for your time and for speaking to us this morning.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.